Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, so much going on in the news today. Government officials are contradicting Scooter Libby on the facts in his trial. Don Imus takes apart Bill O'Reilly for using our troops to make money. That's an entertaining little clip. In a third hour of our program, the Doomsday Clock clicks closer to midnight in our Everything You Know Is Wrong, or Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Yeah. John Fitzgerald Kennedy provides our quote for the day. I'm certain, he says, that after the dust of centuries has passed over our cities, we too will be remembered not for victories or defeats in battle or in politics, but for our contribution to the human spirit. It's a noble thought. Dick Collins is with us. He's with StopHerNow.com, the anti-Hillary website. Dick Collins, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, good to be with you again. How's everything in Oregon?
Just fine, Dick.
It's a little chilly in Texas.
Yeah, well, it's that global climate change stuff that you guys don't like to talk about.
Oh, I know. Well, I just remember 30 years ago, it was global warming.
Yeah, well, it is, actually, but it also changes the climate. Frank Luntz, actually, who said that you should use the phrase, Republicans should use phrase climate change.
Oh, it's climate change, okay.
Yeah. So, in any case, here you guys are running this website, and you're not Democrats, you're not part of the Democratic Party, you got nothing to do with that. It's a bunch of right-wing funders here. In fact, it looks like Arthur Finkelstein was originally behind this website, and why inject yourself into Democratic politics? Why not let the Democratic Party sort out who they're going to have as their nominee? Why do you guys want to get in on the action?
We're involved in politics, not Democratic politics, just general politics. And so I think you need to have discourse on all subjects.
But this is we're talking about the Democratic primary here.
Well, you know, the Democrats are going to vote in the primary, and we want to be able to talk about issues that we're interested in too. So. And dealing in primaries, is okay. We're both sides. Don't you remember in California several years ago when, the governor Gray Davis was running in the Republican primary. He had Richard Rorden, the mayor of Los Angeles, and then Bill Simon, the son of the former secretary of the treasury. And Gray Davis ran negative commercials against Rorden and helped him lose.
I remember in 72 when Nixon figured out that he could not beat Ed Muskie, and apparently, you know, some of the dirty tricksters got up there. According to Hunter S. Thompson, Ibogaine was slipped into Ed Muskie's coffee, and he gets up on the flatbed truck and starts crying about his wife.
I haven't heard that one, but he cried in front of the man.
Yeah, it blew his candidacy apart because Nixon knew that he could beat McGovern, but he couldn't beat Muskie, and so he injected himself into the primary. And again, the same thing, you had the Club for Growth. You know, you had these guys, I believe it was the Club for Growth, it was one of the conservative groups, put $1 million into anti-Howard Dean commercials in Iowa. This is a right-wing conservative group putting the only candidate that they put any money into, $1 million against Howard Dean in these, you know, latte driving. I mean, why are you guys messing in Democratic politics? I just don't get it.
I think that it doesn't need to be just you guys, because we're players on the in the American political spectrum, but everybody does. And so we have our issues that we're interested in, and so
okay, then let me ask you the second question.
Yeah.
Then why the cheap shot stuff? I mean, you've got this cartoon on your site of the Hillary Clinton show, and it starts out with Hillary and Bill, and Hillary's saying, Bill, shut up, and Bill saying, hey, didn't I tell you to run in New York? And then, you know, the Hillary Clinton show starts on TV. Here's a little clip from it.
Our next guest is loved by millions, and
this is
by
Hillary speaking,
for her millions, Barbara Streisand.
Hey, Babs, look over here. Look, it's me, Bill. Bill. Hey, Babs. People.
Babs, my dear friend, it is so good to see you. Tell me, what do you think people need?
Oh, so many things. More taxes, more liberal judges, more illegal immigration, more animal rights, more rights for everyone but white males, more self-righteous left-wing liberals, more government spending, more welfare, more foreign aid, and absolutely more prison release programs.
Moron is more like
more
it.
Youths, more women's rights, more feminists, more ladies' rooms, and more music sales.
There's a long
worst people in the world.
So, Babs, I hope I can count on a contribution again this year.
Sure, Hillary, but...
Yeah, and on it goes like that. I mean, this is just cheap shot stuff.
No, hey, Tom, this is humor. It's fun. That's not a cheap shot. And both sides of the political spectrum have outspoken people like Barbara Streisand, who will say somewhat outrageous things, and we made fun of her.
What has she said that's outrageous?
Oh, well, you know, she wrote a 10-page letter to various political insiders of the Democratic Party about what a bad guy Bush was, and he ought to do all this kind of stuff. And she said,
"Well, he is a bad guy." I mean, and why drag her into this? The Hillary Clinton is Hillary Clinton. She's not Barbara Streisand. I mean, what you're trying to do is you're trying to paint Hillary Clinton with this picture of this huge brush. In fact, over at your website, you know, you portray her as like, you know, the most evil, the most A, evil person, and B, the most liberal person on earth. And you know A, evil, B, liberal. I mean, there's a lot of Democrats who would say, I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton, she might make a great president, but she is certainly not at the top of the list of the most liberal people in the Democratic Party.
Well, Hillary is a part of the website. It describes Hillary as who she really is. She's a very ambitious, calculating, disciplined, tough politician.
Isn't that true of everybody who becomes president?
Not necessarily. I don't actually think that. I mean, I don't think.
Well, you think Ronald Reagan just bumbled into it?
I think Reagan was a very smart political guy, but you knew what he stood for, and whatever he stood for when he was in 1980, he campaigned for. He was consistent throughout his presidency.
And Hillary Clinton is pretty straightforward about what she stands for.
Hillary Clinton is talking different terminology than when she went to Washington in 1993. She went to Washington as a very liberal Democrat, wants to have universal health care, raise taxes, and cut military spending, and they did.
I don't recall Hillary Clinton ever gratuitously saying, gee, let's raise taxes. Come on, Dick Collins.
Oh,
and as far as universal health care, that's a fine value. That's a value that's held by more than 80% of Americans.
Well,
we all want universal health care. It's you right-wing cranks who don't. No offense. You still there, Dick?
Yeah, what's your point, Tom?
Well, I didn't mean to call you a right-wing crank. I just
okay.
wanted to apologize for
that. But the point is what we're trying to do with our website is define Hillary. She's a very tough, calculating, ambitious politician. And if people know anything about her, she is all of those things, and she's portrayed that. But it's kind of funny, and I thought the Streisand piece was funny.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be funny, and you know, you can like, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, then who can you laugh at?
In an upcoming
episode, we're gonna, you know, some Republicans are gonna appear on the Hillary show in not the most favorable way, but to have some fun.
Yeah, we're talking with Dick Collins. He's with StopHerNow.com, the founder and president of StopHerNow.com. And, Dick, if Hillary is not the most liberal candidate, and I think you'll have to agree with me that she's not of the people who are announced, and you're anti-liberal, why go after her uniquely? I mean, you know, why haven't you put together an anti-Dennis Kucinich site or something like that?
Well, Dennis Kucinich doesn't matter. He's an obscure candidate from no place. He's from Cleveland, former mayor of Cleveland. Don't you remember the Cuyahoga River caught fire while he was mayor?
Well, he did some great stuff with the power company. He kept that power company utility, saved the people of Ohio $100 million over the years.
In any event, the Cuyahoga River still caught fire while he was mayor.
I doubt that he ran the factory that was dumping the chemicals into it.
I'm sure he was not doing that, but we could have a lot of fun with him. But he's not he's not going to be the nominee.
So you're going after Hillary because you think that she has the greatest probability of being the nominee of the Democratic Party.
I think it's her race to lose. I think that John Edwards and Barack Obama have forced her to get in the race earlier. John Edwards has been campaigning in Iowa for 3.5 years, and he's ahead in the polls.
Yeah.
But I don't.
So are you going to do Stop Him Now websites and Stop Obama Now websites?
Well, I think John Edwards is not going to be the nominee. I think Hillary's going to be the nominee, and I think that she's I think it's going to be a very tough primary for her. I think she will be the nominee, and I think that John Edwards is not going anywhere. I think Barack Obama.
Would you have a problem, Dick Collins, if Democrats were dumping money into the Republican primaries?
No. Hey, Tom, that's what this is politics. It's a free country. Let people campaign.
Yeah, well, and, I'm not telling you you shouldn't be doing it or it should be illegal or something.
Nothing wrong with doing it.
I just have some concerns about the, frankly, morality is probably too strong a word for it, but it just doesn't seem like the right or the honest thing to do.
Oh, where'd you come off with that, man?
Well, I think political parties should figure out who their nominees are going to be, on their own.
Everybody can help, and so we want to have fun at our website, stoppernow.com, and I invite everybody, all your listeners, to look at what we're doing and
drop on by, make up their own mind. Dick Collins, stoppernow.com, founder and president. Dick, thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking to you. 16 minutes past the hour. Mantra of the right. And if it's not Bill's fault, it's Hillary's fault, right? Come on, give me a break. I mean, I am not the number one cheerleader for the Hillary Clinton fan club. I think anybody who listens to the program knows that, but I'm also not her number one critic. I am of the opinion that it's really, frankly, the most important thing is not who the candidate is. It's what we are doing. And, in the chat room, it's interesting. You can drop by our chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com, click live chat, and by the way, welcome back, 21 minutes past the hour. And the chat room folks are saying, the right wingers, they're afraid of a woman commander in chief. That's what this is all about. The characteristic, she's calculating. She's tough. What? She's not supposed to be because she's a female? This is a only men are supposed to be. Come on. Anyhow, as I was saying, I'm not. Hillary's politics and mine are somewhat different in some areas. I'll put that right up front. And yet, if she was the nominee of the Democratic Party, I would work very hard to get her elected, because I believe that it's all about us. It's all about the parade. It's about enough of us getting out there and getting active. And I believe that, frankly, she is the kind of politician who does listen to the people, which is something that I respect. Look at what happens when you get somebody who is firm and resolute, right? Like George W. Bush. In other words, he doesn't give a damn what the people say. The people say, hey, we don't want to be in Iraq anymore. Thank you very much. Let's let them sort it out. Let's get out of the way of that civil war. We didn't want to go there in the first place. And we certainly don't want to be bombing Iran. And Bush is like, oh, no, I'm listening to my higher father here. I'm going to go ahead and do it. Or Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan comes in and he's got, we're going to privatize everything, free market, and do away with government things. There's just nothing good. In fact, Ronald Reagan made the comment once that there are no good minds in government, because if there were, they would have been hired by private industry. You get that? I mean, this was an all-out war on just the idea of public service. Here's another one.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And so he waged an 8-year war on the idea of democracy on which this country was founded. And when it was obvious that his policies weren't working, what did he do? He kept doing them. And we ended up with Ronald Reagan borrowed and spent in order to make it look like there was a good economy, even though there's a serious recession in the middle of his presidency. He borrowed and spent in order to make it look like a good economy. Just like if you give me a big enough credit card, I could make it look like I got a really fancy house and a good lifestyle, right? He borrowed and spent more money than every president from George Washington up until Ronald Reagan combined, including the fighting the Revolutionary War, fighting the Civil War, fighting the War of 1812, fighting the Spanish-American War, fighting the World War I, fighting the Korean War, fighting World War II, and fighting the war in Vietnam. All the money that was borrowed in all of those wars, all of it combined. Ronald Reagan borrowed more money than all other presidents combined. Left us now. Here we are. This year, we're going to spend $350 billion. Enough money to send over 10 million kids for full 4-year scholarships in college. We're gonna spend that amount of money on interest on the national debt, on that share of the interest of the national debt that Ronald Reagan ran up. He comes in, he says, I know what's right. I'm gonna do, this is what I'm gonna do. We're just gonna borrow and spend like crazy, and we're gonna starve the beast. We're going to so destroy this government that it can't survive anymore and there won't be any social programs. You get it? Because the whole con thing, it's all about...
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
So a bottom line for me is if Hillary Clinton has changed her position on something because the people changed their position on something, and frankly, I'm not sure what that may be because I thought that, you know, she worked hard for a national health care program. I believe she's still in favor of one. But, you know, that's the charge that's made by the right. And, you know, our guest didn't offer any specifics beyond that. And I don't, as I said, I don't think that that's a specific. But if a politician does change their position on an issue because conditions change, because we the people speak out loudly. I mean, look at, you know, Chuck Hagel, the Republican, saying, don't know about this thing in Iraq. You know, God bless him. You've got people, if a politician changes their position because it's the right thing to do, we should be saluting them. Because in the United States, we do not elect leaders. It's not how this country was organized. Our Constitution was designed as a constitutionally limited representative democratic republic. We elect representatives. Their job is to represent us. We the people are the first three words of the Constitution. It's all about the parade. It's all about we the people. It's all about us. It's about getting out there and getting in front of all of these issues and saying to the politicians, this is how we want you to represent us. And so if a politician is representing us, we elect them. And if that happens to be Hillary Clinton, God bless her. And I, as I said, even though I disagree with her on a number of issues, I hope that if I'm right and enough people agree with me, that she would change her mind. And if not, hey, she's a heck of a lot better than what we've got right now. And I don't mean that as like damning with faint praise. I really don't. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Well, but I'm just frankly horrified. I was horrified when these guys went in and spent $1 million to take down Howard Dean in Iowa because I thought he would have made a great president. I still think he would. And I'm horrified by this. 27 minutes past the hour.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Oh, there's a lot in the news. Joe Biden just came out and announced that he's running for president of the United States. And in his opinion, Hillary Clinton's plan is, quote, a disaster. Her plan for Iraq, he says it's not a military solution to the situation in Iraq. So there he is. Now, when Democrats criticize Democrats, I think that's entirely appropriate. He says, I think it would be a disaster if it is her plan to cut off funding for Iraqi local forces. This is on Good Morning America with Diane Sawyer today. He says, I think it's counterproductive. That's Joe Biden. But Republicans taking a whack at Democrats, I'm sorry. I'm not there. Meanwhile, a soldier has called out Bush. Specialist Ryan Schmidt of Forest Lake, Minnesota, serving in Iraq, and NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams was interviewing Bush, and he forwarded this question along, which was, what if your plan for a troop surge to Baghdad doesn't work? And so here's, you know, Bush's response.
Well, I would say to Ryan, I put it in place on the advice of a lot of smart people, particularly the military people who thinks it will work. And let us go into this aspect of the Iraqi strategy feeling it will work. But I will also assure Ryan that we're constantly adjusting to conditions on the ground. We ask special.
Now, the we ask part, this is Minnesota Public Radio, I believe. And so they come in and they say, we ask Specialist Ryan what he thought of this. And here's his response.
Well, Schmidt, if he was satisfied with the president's answer.
No, it did not answer my question. I would have liked to know more so that there will be a plan if this does not work. For some of us that are over here, particularly me, my unit, we all feel that what's the point of us being extended if your initial plan to send more troops over here does not work? What are you going to do, Mr. President?
Yeah. What's the plan B? And, you know, of course, the official answer is plan B.
1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Ray in Seattle. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, you are great, and you get better.
Thank you, Ray. What's up?
It's Roy Bird from the chat room.
Oh, great.
I want to say, with Joe Biden in the race, Hillary is doomed.
You think so?
Yes, I do. I believe that Howard Dean knew Hillary was the candidate and knew that the right would be able to spin her into oblivion. Yeah. And I believe that he encouraged Joe Biden to jump in.
See, I don't think anybody needed to encourage Joe Biden. I met Joe Biden maybe three years ago in Washington, D.C. He gave a talk for a small group of us. There were about 30 of us.
Yeah.
And he and Ted Kennedy came in, and Hillary Clinton also came in, and each one of them talked to us, gave about a 20-minute talk and then sat and talked with us. And that guy was running for president on that day. There was just no doubt in my mind.
Excellent.
He's done it before, he's a very, very articulate guy.
Yeah, I know. He's a great guy. I think this time, I think the dynamic is good for him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And it's going to be an interesting one to race to watch, as it were. I'm frankly more concerned with what the issues are than which candidate has the greatest probability of winning based on, whether he's male or female or she's female or black or white or where they are, what part of the country they're from or whatever. I think we really need to be getting down to and talking about the issues. And certainly Iraq is a big one. Ray, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Mike in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. Just like your last caller, I'm not going to bother to ask how you're doing because I know you're getting better.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
I know decorum keeps you from referring to your last guest, Dick Collins, as a Republican bonehead, but I can do it. And let me serve as your Cleveland expert for the day. The kind of facts that he spews out, of course, are incorrect. The Cuyahoga River caught fire in 1969. Mayor Carl Stokes presided over that.
Oh, interesting.
And Dennis Kucinich was mayor from 1977 to 79, nearly 10 years later.
Yeah.
So this is typical of the kind of facts that this man has to deal out.
Yeah, well, interesting. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for setting the record straight. I appreciate it. I did not know that, and it's always good to know. Always good to have the record right. I appreciate it. Jim in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, your first guest there, Mr. Collins, He's a typical right-wing Texan there. I lived in Texas 15 years, so yeah, I've seen his type before. But what they're doing here, it's the same old tired stuff they've been doing since 1971. This is produced and directed by Roger Ailes, and it's called, Republican Dirty Tricks. And this is all part of their mantra. But the thing of it is, the American people have finally caught up to and have finally figured out what their game plan is. And I'm going to tell you, if they're not careful, if they keep doing the same thing, they're just going to put Hillary in the White House, and then how are they going to feel about their little plan?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, and you're absolutely right. This is, certainly there have been dirty tricks in politics forever. I mean, in the Jefferson Adams campaign of 1800, John Adams had people planting stories in the newspaper about Jefferson sleeping with Sally Hemings. It's been around for a long, long time. But it was during the Nixon campaign that it really got turned into an art form. And, particularly with Ed Muskie. I mean, if Hunter Thompson's reporting is to be considered accurate, and Hunter had a few problems, but he was also usually a pretty solid reporter. That Ed Muskie got doped and got up there and went off. And the whole reason was because Nixon knew that he couldn't beat Muskie. He had done the polling. Ed Muskie was very, very popular. He was a statesman. He was a real statesman. And he was opposed to the war in Vietnam. John in Burlington, Washington. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. I want to thank you for putting these right-wing, actually, they're conservatives and on, because It just reveals what they're all about. And the fact is that they don't believe in the truth, and they don't believe in the rule of law. They believe in a selective application of the law to accomplish their goal. And their goal is,
for example,
their goal is to create a unitary executive, which is basically a modern day monarchy that enables their economic aristocracy.
Well, that's at the core of conservative thought. I mean, you know, Alexander Hamilton, one of America's first conservatives, stood up and gave an opening speech on the second day of the Constitutional Convention and said there has never been a more perfect form of government formed than that of England, and we should do well to emulate it, and therefore the president, once elected, should serve for life. And then you elect another president. And
by the way,
go ahead.
By the way, that's why we should be framing these people as specifically that, the actual traditional Burkean conservatives, because they have nothing to do with what original Republican, as you state in your book, Screwed, they have nothing to do with what the original Republicans were about. Original Republicans detested monarchy, detested aristocracy, and...
Yeah, these guys represent what has been a subcurrent underneath American politics since the founding of this country, and has only emerged a couple of times.
By the way, one more quick thing.
Yeah.
Okay, we can count on one of the things that's really positive about Hillary running is these people, these conservatives, now are afraid of their own unitary executive beliefs, because now if Hillary gets in there, she can do signing statements. She can be the unitary executive.
I know. See, that's the question that when I would have these conservatives on back, you know, 6 months ago or so, before it was, you know, before she was running, and they say, oh, no, Bush should have this power, he should have that power. I say, well, do you think Hillary Clinton should have that power? And all of a sudden there'd be this, yeah.
Exactly.
And they'd start mumbling and dissembling, and, well, you know, maybe it should be limited just to, for the term of one presidency or something.
Thanks for your time, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call, John. Ted in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Yes, I just wanted to say that Plan B is to bomb Iran, and
yeah, you know it, and I know it. Bush won't admit it.
But there is a substantial wing of the Democratic Party that is on board with the bomb Iran plan. John Edwards was just in a conference with Benjamin Netanyahu, Newt Gingrich, and all of the people who were involved in a paper called Clean Break, which was put forth by Richard Perle. And the Likud party is basically not in control, but they are in collusion with a substantial wing of the Democratic Party, which includes Hillary Clinton.
And the Republican Party as well. I mean, you know, American politics and Israeli politics, or for that matter, American politics and Indian politics, Pakistani politics, Japanese politics, they've been intertwined for a long, long time. I'd be amazed to find out, though, and Ted, if you've got some information, email it to me, tom@tomhartman.com. I'd be amazed to find out that John Edwards is in favor of bombing Iran. It boggles my mind. I can't believe it. Jim in San Francisco. Hey, Jim, got a few seconds here before we've got to take a break.
Yeah, I read an op-ed yesterday in the Chronicle about how Bush manipulating the oil prices by manipulating the oil reserves, the strategic oil reserves.
Yeah, build it up when he wants to raise the price of oil, and when an election comes, drop it back down again, start letting oil out of it.
Exactly, and talks about doubling the reserve and therefore increasing oil prices even more.
Yep.
In the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could explain that sometime.
Well, it's you know, it's supply and demand. If Bush starts buying $40 billion worth of oil, if he buys $40 billion worth of oil to put into the oil reserves, and thanks for the call, Jim, then it's gonna drive up demand. At the same time, Saudi Arabia just announced that they're cutting production. And so, gee, the price of oil goes up, and all the oil guys like Cheney make more money. 45 minutes past the hour.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show? What was it you wanted? Could you say it again?
Well, how about national health care? How about a clean environment? How about a world at peace? How about decent diplomacy? How about the interests of America being put first for Americans, and the interest every other nation also having the freedom to seek their own self-interest and do what's right for their people? How about a decent wage? How about a return to the middle class? Welcome back. Not answering Bob Dylan's rhetorical questions here. It could go on forever. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Catherine in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG, Clear Channel in Grand Rapids. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Tom. You are cheap therapy for all of us
okay,
trying to live through this torture for 100 years now. I want to say kudos to you and your listeners for putting the Democrats into the Congress and to the Senate.
It's all of us. I mean, it's you
right.
too. If
we can do that, you know what we can do? We can get Bush, thrown out of office, and we can get our boys back from Iraq, you know?
There you go.
So what I'm asking is, now my husband's like, oh, it's not so simple, but can't we beg the refs? Can't we just inundate Congress with phone calls and
yes.
emails?
Yes, and that's what we have to do. And you look at, I mean, you know, for example, there were right-wing groups who were concerned about obscenity on TV. Turns out it was like three people behind this thing. They got 10,000 letters into the FCC. The FCC actually changed their rules. The same thing happened in the 90s. A number of small groups of right-wingers with cranking out these huge postcard campaigns, Richard Viguerie and like this, changing legislation. Yes, by all means, absolutely. You're spot on, Catherine, and thank you for pointing it out. The number is the toll-free number for Congress. You can call your member of Congress, 866-220-0044, 220-0044, or if you have free long distance, you can just call them direct, 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121, and just, you know, ask for your member of Congress and tell them, hey, enough already. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom, earlier you had a caller talking about how the liberals should call these Republicans for what they truly are, and then he went and used some big words like they're supporters of unitary executive or monarchy or aristocracy. And FDR, 60 years ago, had a perfect slogan. He called them economic royalists, and he used that in that silly speech from 1936, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 times. He would say it slowly, these economic royalists, which, you know, talk
the
about.
The royalists I have spoken of.
Is this it?
Yeah.
The royalists of the economic order have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business.
I mean, this guy, he just took him on head on. He's not putting up with anything. He continues.
They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work and his right to live.
Indeed, and he was spot on. Yesterday was his birthday, by the way, and then he nails them, finally. Nails them.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance.
Our allegiance to Democratic
and our
American
allegiance to American institutions
requires
the overthrow of this kind of power.
There you go. Okay, have I made your day, Tom?
And there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Just use that powerful brand.
Yeah, we really do. I agree. We need to bring back the meme, the economic royalist. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. I always appreciate a good excuse to play FDR. Kathleen from Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Kathleen.
Good morning, Tom. I appreciate your ADD work. But I really called about the discussions about Hillary for president, and
mm-hmm.
I'm a definitely a progressive. But I would also say that I don't approve of the dynastic tendencies in the Bushes as presidents. And really, I don't see a big difference between the wife of a former president holding that office as well. I think
yeah.
those sub rosa connections exist from husband to wife as well as father to son. And
so we go Bush, Clinton,
exactly.
and then Jeb Bush runs, and we go back to Bush, and then
exactly.
maybe Chelsea, you know, who
yeah,
knows.
Exactly.
Yeah, I share your discomfort with that, but at the end of the day, for me, it's about the issues. But I understand what you're saying, Kathleen, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Alice in Arkansas. Hey, Alice.
Hi there. Two quick things. One, okay. if anybody could tell Muskie was under the influence, it would have been Hunter.
Yeah, Hunter S. Thompson. He certainly knew it when he saw it, because he wasn't.
that he would know somebody on drugs.
Yep.
The other thing is, I'm really, really uncomfortable with Joe Biden. And I know that, you know, hanging on one thing is not always the best way to go about it. But Joe Biden said to Alberto Gonzalez during the hearings, I like you. You're the real deal.
Well.
And he voted for him.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one to get past.
How can you trust anybody that would
that's
vote
a
for
tough
him?
One to get past. Alice, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye now. Thanks a lot for the heads up. You know, and but the other point that Alice makes is that we can't judge any candidate by any one thing. And I mean, keep in mind, Roosevelt, who we were just playing a clip of, he ran as a moderate. He, you know, he was just a very middle-of-the-road guy. He's not gonna go too far to the left, not going to go too far to the right. He's running against Herbert Hoover, whose campaign slogan in the election of 32 was prosperity is just around the corner. The American people are going, oh, wait a minute, the Republican Great Depression, and we got a Republican telling us this? Don't think so. Anyhow, we'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after the news at the top of the hour. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the radio support group up by and for We the People of the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. Iran may have trained attackers that killed five American soldiers, U.S. and Iraqis say. There's an odd collection of headlines and stories in the news yesterday and today that I want to quickly go over with you and share my thoughts on this, my take on this, because I see this as, on the one hand, the probably logical consequence of the United States messing in somebody else's part of the world. And on the other hand, I suspect that we're seeing the setup for what, you know, one of our callers referred to in the last hour as Plan B. As Bush's Plan B, well, if the Plan A doesn't work in Iraq, what's Plan B? Bomb Iran! Almost sounds like a song, doesn't it? Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Yeah, pretty soon somebody will come out with it. But there's really two sides to this, or three or four sides to it, of course, as, like with anything in the Middle East. But let's just look at a couple of these things here. First of all, today's paper, today's New York Times, James Glantz and Mark Mazzetti. Investigators say they believe that attackers who used American-style uniforms and weapons to infiltrate a secure compound and kill five American soldiers in Karbala on January 20th may have been trained and financed by Iranian agents, according to American and Iraqi officials knowledgeable about the inquiry. The officials said the sophistication of the attack astonished investigators, who doubt that Iraqis could have carried it out on their own. One reason, a connection to Iran, is being closely examined. Officials cautioned that no firm conclusions have been drawn and did not reveal any direct evidence of a connection. Which is another way of saying this might just be a story that's being fed to us. Now, first of all, the assumption of this statement, that they were astonished by how sophisticated these guys were, who went in and killed these five American soldiers. They went in with, you know, American-style uniforms and weapons. Aren't we supposed to be teaching Iraqis how to be sophisticated warriors? I mean, isn't that what we're doing there? Or isn't that what we're supposed to be doing there? So there's a subtext, an assumption built into that statement that I think, you know, we all really need to examine. And if that assumption is reflecting some sort of reality on the ground, then we have a big problem. And if it's not, then we have a big propaganda piece here. And that subtext is the Iraqis aren't all that bright. They're kind of dumb. They couldn't have come up with this themselves. I mean, this is the kind of language that people people use to justify imperialism. It's the kind of language that has been used to justify slavery. It's the kind of language that's been used to justify, you know, occupying other people's country. Oh, we're doing it for their benefit. We'll just put them on the reservations. You know, they really don't know what they're doing. So first of all, there's just this breathtaking arrogance. Iraq is the cradle of civilization. 7,000 years ago, this was Mesopotamia. This is where Gilgamesh, you know, the oldest written story known, at least known in the Western world. The Chinese argue that they have older ones, but the Epic of Gilgamesh, 7,000 years old. And in there, by the way, is a story of, what was his name? Upanishad, I think it was, something like that. The one good man who God came to and said, build an ark, would put two of every animal in. I mean, this was 2,000 years before the Bible was written. The Old Testament. And we're saying that the people who are living in the country that is the cradle of civilization, who built a country that up until 1991 was sometimes referred to as the Paris of the Middle East, because it was such a fancy, such a sophisticated, such a cool place, Iraq. Women worked, they went to college, they were doctors, they were lawyers, they were teachers, girls went to school, they had a very high literacy rate, they had a strong economy. Yeah, they had a dictator, they had a whack job running the country, and it was a secular country in the midst of surrounded by a number of relatively backward theocracies. And we're saying, gee, we're amazed. These guys did a sophisticated attack. The officials said the sophistication of the attack astonished investigators, who doubt that Iraqis could have carried it out on their own. One reason, a connection to Iran is being closely examined. In other words, the Iranians, they're smart. The Iraqis, they're stupid. Come on, give me a break. Either A, that means that we're not teaching them to be sophisticated warriors, or B, come on, they fought a war with Iran. A million people died. 8 years they fought a war with Iran and fought it to a draw. What, they're not sophisticated? So number one, there's this story in the New York Times, and I'm reading this going, what is the subtext of this thing? What is the real story here? And then in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, and this is the story, frankly, I think that we should all be talking about in America. And nobody, I mean, I saw this in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. I marked it up. I was going to talk about it on the air yesterday. I just never got to it. I mean, there's so many other things. And so when I went home last night, watched the news, watched a bunch of different newscasts, watched the talking heads, and I kept waiting for somebody to bring this up. Nobody once brought it up. I didn't hear it on liberal talk radio. I didn't hear it on conservative talk radio. I didn't see it on television. The article by Bill Spindle in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, the headline, Iranian President's Setbacks, that's Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, embolden his domestic critics. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad suddenly faces a concerted effort by political foes to constrain both his populist economic policies and his public defiance of the West. You get this? People inside Iran are telling Ahmadinejad, shut up and sit down. Back off. As Bill Spindle writes in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, many of Tehran's elite politicians and even clerics have long harbored concerns about Ahmadinejad. And he goes on to say, a round of elections late last year for local, municipal, and village leaders, as well as an important national consultative body, has undermined Mr. Ahmadinejad's political momentum and unleashed a flood of public criticism and moves to clip his wings. In Tehran's city council, from which Mr. Ahmadinejad launched his campaign for president 2 years ago, his supporters went from a majority to a handful of seats. It looks like, you know, if Ahmadinejad is our enemy, and that's, you know, Bush is like personalizing all this stuff. He's the guy who doesn't like Israel. He's the guy who wants to have nukes and all that. Looks like we're winning. Only it's not us winning, it's the Iranians winning. The Wall Street Journal continues, the president even found himself confronted by a crowd of jeering students during an appearance at a Tehran University campus with a video of the incident distributed on the Internet. The poor showing by candidates associated with Mr. Ahmadinejad in local elections and the relatively better performance of reform candidates opposed to him. Now, the people who won are not the ones who are to the right of Ahmadinejad. They're to the left of him. They're not the hardliners. They're not the religious ones. They're the reformers. Resulted from a sort of strong turnout, from the sort of strong turnout that generally favors reformers. This is the Wall Street Journal. The country's conservatives also failed to rally behind a single slate of candidates, as they did in earlier presidential elections. Bill Spindle goes on to say, meanwhile, Mr. Rafsanjani, now you'll recall Rafsanjani used to be the president. He was the guy who thought of America as, you know, let's talk, we can be friends. Meanwhile, Mr. Rafsanjani, a long-time regime power broker and president of the country during much of the early 1990s, is spearheading a tentative movement to rein in Mr. Ahmadinejad, particularly his proclamations about Iran's nuclear program and denunciations of Israel. A key question is whether Mr. Khamenei will continue backing Mr. Ahmadinejad. Now Khamenei is the head cleric. He's like the head of the Supreme Court, only the Supreme Court there, for all practical purposes, has final say in everything. We don't even know if, you know, they're even doubting that he's going to have the support of the guys who really have the power. Mr. Khamenei has done little to stem criticism of Mr. Ahmadinejad. He has also held several meetings with Mr. Rafsanjani. Mr. Khamenei reiterated publicly recently that Iran wouldn't halt enrichment, but Mr. Ahmadinejad has been relatively quiet on the issue in public. Some European diplomats and Iranian analysts say Iran might agree to a temporary pause in the program after the country completes a research-level enrichment project in coming weeks in an effort to keep the crisis from escalating further. The Iranians themselves are saying enough already. So that's yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Today's USA Today, however, headline: General says U.S. has proof Iran arming Iraqi militias. Yep, let's go bomb Iran. They have something to do with those guys who are killing our guys who are occupying Iraq. Is this all starting to, like, are the puzzle pieces starting to form together here? Is this starting to make sense? It is to me, and it concerns me tremendously. 16 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, talking back to the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week on listener-supported radio. Yes, our program supported by you, our listeners, listening for the sponsors on your local stations and letting them know that you're listening. That's how you make progressive talk radio work. And also our national sponsors as well, like Sacred Grounds Coffee, sacredgroundscoffee.com, Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com, and Purina One Natural Blends, 866-380-MEOW. Paula in Carbondale, Illinois, listening on WINI. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I had actually seen a media person mention that election you were talking about, where the people in Iran got rid of the people of Ahmadinejad's party. I saw it on Jon Stewart's Daily Show, and that's a sad comment on our corporate media that would be where you would see it.
Yeah.
Second thing I wanted to say is I actually saw somewhere, I forget, a video of those students heckling Ahmadinejad when he gave a speech,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't get arrested. They didn't get thrown out. No security guards dragged them out the way we are so used to seeing our demonstrators, you know, Cindy Sheehan or Code Pink are always dragged out within minutes.
Yeah, you see Medea Benjamin stand up and say something or unfurl a banner from Code Pink, and boom, the Secret Service is on them. Yeah.
And in Iran, those students just heckled and heckled and heckled, and they never got arrested, at least not that I saw in the video.
Yeah, interesting. Paula, thank you very much for sharing that. It's that's spot on. Cynthia in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Cynthia, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I'm very upset. I was listening to you talking about the abduction and murder of the soldiers.
Yes.
When the story was first told to us, I thought Iraqi sophistication, infiltration, and that's all.
Yeah.
I don't think that anymore. There's a Washington Post article
And it was about one of the soldiers who was killed. His name was Brian Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
He had cornered Christopher Dodd and John Kerry at the Baghdad airport to tell them how bad things were.
Mm-hmm.
He followed up later with an email to complain about the mistreatment of Iraqi interpreters by contractors. I called both of their offices this morning. I want them to really investigate who these people were that killed this soldier and these others who happened to be in the way, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We had a man here in Pennsylvania named Dale Stoffel. When he complained about corruption, he came back here to talk to Rick Santorum. When he went back to Iraq, he was murdered. I guess nobody cares about that anymore. But something's not right here.
Are you suggesting, Cynthia, that perhaps these five Americans were killed or were put in a position where they would be killed because at least one of them was speaking out publicly?
Let me be blunt here. These people looked like mercenaries, spoke like mercenaries, operated like with the precision of mercenaries. One was blonde, they all spoke English. That is what I'm saying, and I want this investigated fully. I don't believe Iran would do this. They have no reason to do it.
No, they're trying as hard as they can right now to avoid a confrontation with us.
Yes, I want this fully investigated. This is really upsetting to me.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Chris Hedges a few days ago. I would love it if you'd have him on to talk about Blackwater and these groups.
Okay.
That are unaccountable to anyone.
Yeah, actually, yesterday somebody sent me a link to a book on Blackwater that Chris didn't write it, somebody else did, but it looked fascinating. I want to look it over, though, before I get him on the air, but thanks for the heads up,
Cynthia. Thank you for letting me vent.
Sure. Yeah, no, you've spoken for many of us. Tom in San Francisco, California. Hey, Tom.
Hey there, Tom. Say, you were asking for some more information about John Edwards and his position on the Iran bombing and sort of thing.
Yeah.
Last week on Democracy Now, it was last Wednesday, Amy Goodman quoted a report in the Independent of London.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that a Financial Times reporter wrote, "The war drums are beating pretty loudly here in Herzliya." That was the security conference in the resort in Israel.
Right.
State Department official Nicholas Burns said that there is no doubt that Iran is seeking a nuclear weapon. James Woolsey likened Iran to Nazi Germany, and John Edwards said, quote, "The challenge in your own backyard represents an unprecedented threat to the world and to Israel." And when I heard this, I actually called you the next day. I would love for you to corroborate and confirm and get the context. I wrote the Edwards people to ask for that. I haven't gotten a reply, but my gosh, I was so bewildered.
Yeah.
And saddened to hear that, and because to me it either means, if it's true, it either means that he's been taken in by the fear and warmongering of the Bush administration,
or he might have been another
Israeli lackey.
Or he might have simply been commenting on the fact that Ahmadinejad has been talking very bluntly in a very anti-Israeli way, and that, you know, that's just like not a good thing. It's
that's
not a good thing
true,
in the
but
region.
At the same time, like as you have said, you know, they've got 3% pure nuclear fuel, not the 99% or whatever it is that's required for a weapon, and that, you know, the U.S. intelligence.
Well, according to the Pentagon, they're a decade
away.
Yeah, 10 years away from.
So I mean, you know, it sounds a bit odd, and I'd love if you would follow up on that.
Yeah, well, I'll look into it.
Thank you.
Tom, thanks a lot for the heads up. Maybe we can get somebody from the Edwards campaign on the program. We'll see. But again, let's not obsess on a single issue also. There's a whole spectrum of things here we need to be looking at. 27 minutes, and that's not to defend or attack John Edwards. 27 minutes past the hour.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back for the healing. Go on with the dreamer.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 34 minutes past the hour. And sometimes you just come across the oddest stuff. This was in The Sun, one of the UK tabloids. And I think it qualifies as our Twilight Zone alert for the day. This is very strange. Tom Cruise is the new Christ of Scientology. The Mission Impossible star has been told he has been chosen to spread the word of his faith throughout the world. And leader David Miscavige believes that in future, Cruise, 44, will be worshipped like Jesus for his work to raise awareness of the religion. A source close to the actor, who has risen to one of the church's top levels, said Tom has been told he is Scientology's Christ-like figure, and like Christ, he's been criticized for his views, but future generations will realize he is right. Mm-hmm. Cruz joined the Church of Scientology in the 80s. Leader L. Ron Hubbard claimed humans bear traces of an ancient alien civilization. Yes, in fact, actually, that we were seated here 10,000 years ago. But that, I'll leave you to watch South Park to learn all about that. Are we ginning up a war with Iran? Is this part of Plan B for the Bush administration? Does Iran represent a real threat to the United States or to Iraq, for that matter? Or to Israel, for that matter? Or are the rational voices, are the adults starting to take control of Iran, and all this hysteria is being whipped up here at home because it serves some political purpose? I'm inclined to the latter, frankly. And, I mean, you know, we've seen this movie before with George W. Bush. We have, you know, his Be Afraid. It is a montage from his speech before the Republican National Committee.
Be Afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, danger, doomed killers. Be Afraid, the world will drift toward tragedy.
Okay, enough of that. Anyhow, and also, you know, Bush just coming out and lying about things. I mean, you know, the for example, the inspectors. Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei, the conventional weapons and nuclear weapons inspectors who were in Iraq, we pulled them out. The United States requested that the UN pull them out because we were going to begin bombing the country. Hans Blix was running around saying, I'm not finding anything. These guys, Bush, he's talking like somebody from the 10th century.
You know, in the Middle Ages when people were convinced they were witches and then they looked for them, they certainly found them.
Yeah, he's saying, but, you know, we're not finding anything. There's nothing here. And so Bush comes out and says...
The larger point is, and the fundamental question is, does Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power, along with other nations, so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States...
He would not let the weapons inspectors in. They were there. They were there. They were looking around. They, you know, Hans Blix.
I'm not ever suggested that they were sort of willfully and consciously lying, but I think that they wanted to jump to conclusions. I said in the Security Council that if something is unaccounted for, it doesn't necessarily mean that they exist. And I think there was that tendency to jump to that conclusion.
Yes, indeed. And are we jumping to conclusions again? It seems that way to me. Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Tom. Thank you so much for bringing up that article. I read it this morning and have a major hissy fit because it sounds like the same old routine that the New York Times pulled before the Iraqi war. I keep remembering that series of articles by Judith Miller.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's Judith Miller all over again.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to be watching this report. And thank you for telling me about that article in the Wall Street Journal. I've got it. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Karen, for the call. Good to hear from you. Stephen in Mesa, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Stephen.
Yes, good morning, Tom. Well, I originally called to comment on that I thought that right-wing nut, his tactics with the Republican dude is going to backfire when they try to destroy Hillary, and I hope it will backfire on them. And I
in our first hour. Yeah.
Yeah. But as I was listening on the phone, as usually happens, with all these subjects, I have to comment on this. Let me just put it this way. I despise Bush to the utmost, and I think Bush and this Ahmadinejad, whatever his name is, Ahmadinejad, crazy jod, if Bush and him are actually the same twins or act like that way, because as much as Bush has been a disaster in foreign policy and botched up this whole, you know, what he's really done to America in reputation at home and abroad, the fact of the matter is, I think you're being way too optimistic to say that Iran is basically not a threat, because even if this Ahmadinejad nut would go and they would get another one, they have actually, I heard a cleric, one of them, said a couple of months ago, it wasn't the Khomeini who you mentioned, was a different name. It was talking to an interpreter. They said their ultimate goal is the absolute obliteration of the Zionist state. So when someone calls John Edwards an Israeli lackey, you know, there's too many Jews who are killed in the Holocaust and their descendants in Israel. They take it seriously when people talk about blowing them up. So I think I'm a rare caller. I'm a
Stephen,
very
Stephen, relax. I agree with you. Here's the two things, though, to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Number one, there are a half a dozen, there's probably a dozen countries in the Middle East whose official policy is that Israel should no longer
exist. No, all of them are.
That's right. Whose official policy?
No,
I mean, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, yeah. Qatar, all these countries that we do business with, their official policy is that Israel should not exist, number one. Ahmadinejad and Iran are not unique in that, number one. My point was that Ahmadinejad is being taken down because of this kind of rhetoric. I agree with you that he and Bush are two sides of the same coin.
They're both catering to the right-wingers in their own countries.
Ahmadinejad, with his whole anti-Holocaust thing, he thought he was going to get the right-wing religious nuts in Iran all going with him, and instead it backfired on him.
But you know, you seem to fail to understand that even if Ahmadinejad was out tomorrow or next week, he will be replaced by someone, if not as bad, but someone equally with the same kind of philosophy. First of all, Tom, I'm not saying that I agree that we should go to have another war. War is the last thing that anyone wants. However, if there is a new Democratic president, hopefully in a year and a half or, you know, sooner as possible, the Democratic president, as well as a Republican, and historically Democratic presidents even more so, are not going to stand by, whether it's President Clinton, President Hillary Clinton, or President John Edwards, is not going to stand by while Israel as an ally and a friend is threatened. So when someone calls
I have been to Israel many times. I am a supporter of Israel and Israel's right to exist. I disagree with many of Israel's foreign policies right now, and I disagree with some of their domestic policies. And I frankly think, and we had Jimmy Carter and I talked about this on this program a few weeks ago, I think it's a shame that we in the United States don't have the same healthy debate about what's going on inside Israel that they do inside Israel.
There's a debate in Israel that why Israel has given away a year and a half ago the Gaza Strip and what they thought would be an act that would bring about a roadmap or beginning of peace. They've been rewarded with thousands of rockets from Gaza. And you haven't mentioned that the suicide bombing attack, which killed for the first time in a year, almost since last April, innocent Israelis. And the Hamas leader says this is just the beginning.
This is why we have this insane idea that if we simply throw open the doors for voting in a country that doesn't have a middle class, like the Palestinian territories or Palestine right now, a country that doesn't have a middle class, and you simply throw open the doors and say, okay, you've got a democracy now, and we think that they're going to elect rational, reasonable, small-d Democrats, they're not. They're going to elect demagogues, and they're going to elect hate mongers, because that's what, you know, when people are terrified and when people are wiped out economically, that's what people go for. And that's all the more reason that we should be joining with Israel to bring about a meaningful and just and lasting peace in that region. And Stephen, thank you for your call. Saddam Hussein going, you know, to the gallows, cursing Israel. I mean, this is an old thing in the Middle East, and this is an issue that does need to be resolved. The Palestinian-Israeli issue needs to be resolved. And Jimmy Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize. He nearly did it. Bill Clinton worked on it really hard. George Bush, he's ignored it for 5 years, and it's a disaster. It's not good for Israel. It's not good for the countries in the area. Todd in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Todd, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Tom. I was wondering if a week and a half ago I read a little article in our city region paper that a third aircraft carrier group was heading to the Middle East.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
I've had two or three people call into the program and tell me that. I believe I saw it on one of the blogs. I haven't seen it in any of the mainstream media, frankly.
But it's entirely possible
it slipped by me.
The only reason is that we now have an admiral that is going to command in Iraq, the Navy and the Army, and oddly enough, he was stationed at Pearl Harbor, which would make this aircraft carrier group something that he would be very familiar with.
Interesting. Well, let's all keep our ears and eyes open. And if you track down a solid source on the thing, let me know. Would you?
It was in the city region, part of our newspaper, and I've not seen anything on television or heard anything on the radio about that.
You sure this wasn't the second carrier group?
No, this is the third aircraft carrier group. They already said they stated that there was two aircraft carrier groups over there now, and a third one was going over. And this is supposedly an Eisenhower class aircraft carrier, so I guess it's the big one.
Yeah. No, like I said, is it the Ronald Reagan? I think I saw it over on. Go ahead.
I'm almost positive it was another name of from. It was stationed in Bremerton.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we'll keep our eyes and ears open. Todd, thanks a lot for the heads up. I really, you know, we're hearing the drumbeat of war here. They're not going to do it until it's militarily possible, and that won't happen until the middle of March. But if this is Bush's plan B, God help us all. 45 minutes past the hour.
We live in the land of plenty, but many things aren't plenty anymore. Like the water from our sink, they say it's not safe to drink. You gotta go and buy it at the store. Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone. Look at what's washing on the beach. And Lord, I believe from the heavens to the sea, we're bringing Mother Nature to her knees. Let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down.
And welcome back to the Vast Liberal Conspiracy. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here with you 9 minutes before the hour. I have the story. This Bremerton carrier heads to Middle East. It's an Associated Press story. It's published in the Seattle Times. USS John C. Stennis left its home port. This was on January 17th. Left its home port of Bremerton on Tuesday, headed for the Middle East, where it, along with another U.S. aircraft carrier, will patrol the Persian Gulf. The Stennis Strike Group, which previously was in line to deploy to the Pacific, will augment another Navy task force in Mideast waters, led by the aircraft carrier USS Dwight D. Eisenhower. Now, my recollection is that the Eisenhower is the one that has been there all along and that was supposed to rotate out, and the Stennis was going to replace it, and they've decided to keep the Eisenhower, and the Stennis is the second. This was a link that was Lauren just shared with me and was sent to us by a caller in the Seattle area. I still don't see this as a third one. I'm not sure. Victoria Jones is on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Perhaps she knows. Victoria, are there two or three aircraft carrier strike groups heading for the Middle East right now?
Don't know the answer to that one.
Can you track it down for us?
I'll do my best.
In some authoritative way, because we're getting...
Oh, you want authoritative as well?
We're getting mixed messages. How did Bush say it? Whatever. You get the point.
Text message.
mangled. So what's happening in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, interesting. A lot of hearings. We had Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright up before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We've also got Senators Charles Schumer and Barack Obama introducing a bill today together that's going to make intimidating and deceiving voters a federal crime with serious
penalties. Whoa! That's great.
Yes. Now, it's not going to stop everything, but it is going to stop things like, showing up and telling immigrants that they're not allowed to vote.
Or like the flyers that the Republicans passed out in Democratic districts saying that the voting day had been changed from Tuesday to Wednesday for their particular area. Or the phony letters that went out to people in Democratic districts saying that their precinct had changed and they were supposed to vote someplace else. They show up, they stand in line for 7 hours, and then they're told, oh, no, you're in the wrong place. And at that point, it's too late for them to vote. I mean, you know, these kind of things that have become basically standard operating procedure for Republicans over at least the last three elections, over the last 6 years.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And there's another one. In Maryland, in the fall, black neighborhoods, they had a flyer handed out, Democratic sample ballot, with photos of black Democratic leaders, and then there were boxes checked off beside the names of the Republican candidates for senator and governor.
Right, yes. And another one. There was all across the country in the 2004, like before the 2004 election, there were groups that were setting up little tables, you know, what do you call them? Coffee table, card table things, you know, out in front of federal buildings and libraries and shopping malls and public places, and they said register to vote. And you would sign, and you would register to vote, and if you checked that you wanted to register as a Democrat, they threw away your voter registration. So when you showed up to vote, If they had thrown it away, you weren't actually registered to vote. You'd get one of these placebo ballots. They call them provisional ballots, but they're really, you know, you think you voted, but you didn't. And they ultimately get thrown away and your vote doesn't count. And you never even know it. You never even know it. And we have no idea how many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people got caught up in this scam. It was a TV station in Las Vegas that actually caught this on camera. You know, these guys destroying the Democratic ballots in a dumpster, you know.
I don't even know if that one would be caught by this. That's very interesting. But
yeah. Well, they were doing it here in Oregon as well.
It's become standard procedure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. Well, that's great to hear that they are passing that law.
Yeah, no, there are actually things happening. It's very interesting. And I've been on Capitol Hill the last couple of days because the president's out of town, and I've got to say, it's all hearings all the time. You actually get the impression, Tom, that Congress has a role to play in oversight.
Holy cow, an extraordinary idea.
I'm telling you.
Has John Conyers begun his hearings into impeachable crimes?
No, I don't think they've begun yet.
Yeah, but he's probably taking it very carefully and very thoughtfully.
I think so.
He's the guy who brought down Richard Nixon. He's my man.
He's not going to rush it.
He is the institutional memory of Congress. I'll tell you. By the way, yesterday the Wall Street Journal ran a piece about how Ahmadinejad is losing power in Iran and the moderates are taking over and students are heckling him and basically the adults are taking over. 3 days ago in the New York Times, there was an article about how Iraq and Iran have come to a mutual military assistance program, and Iraq is requesting military aid from Iran.
Right.
And today, in USA Today and in the New York Times, we're hearing that, we're finding Iranian military in Iraq, and implicitly, therefore, we should start bombing Iran. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, what's wrong with the picture is, the question is whose story is trying to get out here? I have absolutely no idea what the truth is or what is actually going on, and I don't believe any of it.
Yeah. I believe that Ahmadinejad is losing power in Iran. I mean, I think the Wall Street Journal reported on that pretty solidly, but
that may not be what some people want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was that one-time story. I didn't see any mention of it in the mainstream media beyond that yesterday or today. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com out of Washington, D.C. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
It's good talking with you. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour with Kenneth Benedict about the doomsday clock. Larry Scott will be with us, VAWatchdog.org. Plus, we'll be taking your calls for more news of the day. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you. Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
So here I think is the latest, and this echoes what I've been reading on the blogs. And as I said, I haven't seen it in the mainstream media. But we have the USS Eisenhower carrier group in the Persian Gulf. The Stennis just recently left Bremerton, is heading for the Persian Gulf. Problem is, there's not enough room in the Gulf for a third aircraft carrier group, so the USS Abraham Lincoln may be soon heading out to the Indian Ocean to be sort of in position, but not right there. But that's sort of, you know, we've had a couple of callers say this is the gossip inside the Navy. And as I said, this is what I'm seeing on the blogs. Haven't seen it reported in any of the mainstream media. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. Time now to check out, you know, what you know that you know. Sometimes you know what you know. Sometimes you know what you don't know. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes you don't know what you need to know. Sometimes even everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of
your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
And our Everything You Know is Wrong segment sponsored by LiberalStore.com. All things liberal and bumper stickers, buttons, T-shirts, and more. Go out and check the liberal teddy bear there now. That's LiberalStore.com. And our Everything You Know is Wrong guest today, Kenneth, or Kennett? Is it Kennett or Kenneth?
Kennett.
Kennett, I'm sorry. Kennett Benedict, the executive director of The Bulletin. The website, oddly enough, thebulletin.org. This is the clock, isn't it, Kennett?
Yes, this is, we are the keepers of the doomsday clock. We're the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. And, we've been keeping, this clock for almost 60 years now.
And where are we at this moment?
Well, a couple weeks ago, January 17th, we moved the hand of the clock from 7 minutes to midnight to 5 minutes to midnight. This is a big step for us. We think it's warranted for a couple of big, big reasons, and I'd like to talk about a couple
sure.
of them.
Please.
The first is that we're seeing a pattern in nuclear weapons interest, let's say. These are very dangerous weapons, as we all know. They are the single most destructive technology on Earth. And we are seeing more countries who want to get them. We're seeing, North Korea and Iran. We also know that individuals have been interested in getting them. And there is material still in Russia. About half of their fissile material is still unsecured. We've been working on it for about 10 years now, the U.S. and the Russians, but we've still got more to go. Of course, the U.S. doctrine now suggests that we will use nuclear weapons against, quote, time-urgent targets. So we're seeing a kind of unraveling of the understandings, the rules, the ways we had of thinking about these weapons during the Cold War. Just one last thing.
Yeah.
On top of that, we still haven't really finished up from the Cold War. We have the U.S. and Russia has 26,000 nuclear weapons together, and each of us has 1,000 on high launch readiness. We're ready to fight an all-out nuclear war every minute of every day.
With Russia.
I mean, they've got 1,000, we've got 1,000 still. We really haven't stood down since the end of the Cold War.
Is the president still followed around by a guy with the color football?
Sure. Oh, yes, yes.
Basically,
yes.
Bush still has his finger on the button. That's a creepy thought. I'm curious if the decision by the Bush administration to sell nuclear technology to India, even though India refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement, mm-hmm. and our selling them this advanced nuclear power generating technology will allow them to more efficiently use more of their old power generating capability to actually generate material that could be used for weapons, if that was part of your equation.
Well, it's part of this pattern of seeing the nuclear weapons as something that we can kind of live with, and that, if India has a nuclear weapons program, which of course it does, and it's had one for many years, but we've really tried to say, no, that's not a good idea. That was part of it. The other big thing that we are worried about now is that for the first time we've added climate change to our concerns.
Yeah, this started out as the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists.
Right. And the doomsday we're talking about, we're pretty serious about this. 26,000 nuclear weapons could kill 8 billion people. Well, there are only 6 billion on the planet, so that gives you an idea of how much destructive capacity we have. And climate change, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is going to be coming out with a report on Friday, and that's going to say that, we're headed for a 3-degree Celsius rise in global temperature, which means, essentially the coral reefs will be gone, so you better go get your scuba diving gear on to see them before they go. The polar ice caps are really going very fast. We'll have 50% species extinction. Growing seasons of crops will change. Agricultural products or agricultural lands will be severely stressed. So we're looking at a pretty dire set of circumstances. And if we don't do something in the next 10 years, it's really going to be pretty miserable. And so the nuclear energy is one, possibility to try and reduce our carbon emissions. But of course, that brings its own problems with the potential for proliferation, as you just pointed out, for instance, with the Indian technologies now there. So we are, this is really a big, these are big global problems, and they feed into one another, and we're not doing a really quick enough job, we think, to address them in a way that will protect us and will actually allow us to, human societies to survive. We always are accused of being a little bit too apocalyptic, but we've had great success over the last 60 years in making sure people knew how bad the situation was, and they've done things about it. So we're hoping that now we can bring this to people's attention and get people to express their concerns about the stupid problem.
Kenneth Benedict, the executive director of the Bulletin, thebulletin.org is the website, the Doomsday Clock, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. My initial response when I heard that the Doomsday Clock had moved to, it's now what, 5 minutes before?
Yes.
5 minutes before doom, mm-hmm. is that there are 24 hours in a day, presumably it's a one-day clock, and 60 minutes per hour, and I can't do the math in my head that fast, but that's a lot of minutes. And it seems that for most of my life, at least most of my life that I've been paying attention to this, the last, you know, 30, 40 years or so, we've been within that last hour. We've been within the last 15 minutes, in fact, it seems, most of that time.
Well, that's been that was part of the original design. You're absolutely right. We've seen, as long as there are nuclear weapons that are in use, that are deployed as they are now, and are available for use, there is the possibility for real catastrophe.
Right.
Frankly, as long, you know, once these things were created, we put ourselves in quite a pickle, and that's what the atomic scientists are trying to tell people. Einstein said, you know, who was involved in the early days of the Bulletin, said, with nuclear weapons, everything has changed, save our way of thinking. We still think we can fight wars with these things, that they have a use, and it's just not possible. So, yes, it's always been in the last quadrant. The time that it came, we were at 17 minutes of, so we did break out of that last quarter, was after the end of the Cold War in 1991, when we made huge reductions. In fact, the first President Bush was great in this regard. He did major unilateral reductions. Even Reagan at the Reykjavik summit, he and Gorbachev agreed that we should get rid of these things.
But then they didn't.
They didn't. And so we've gone from 60,000 nuclear weapons altogether between the U.S. and the then Soviet Union down to 26,000. So we've gone in the right direction for a number of years, but we're really concerned because we see that we're stalled, and there's the prospect now of arms races in Northeast Asia, in the Middle East, of all places.
Well, and also the Bush administration is talking about a whole new generation of nuclear weapons,
exactly.
of tactical nukes.
Yes, that's exactly right, and that's what they want to use against these time-urgent targets, as they call them.
Right, like the nuclear reactor facilities in Iran.
Well, perhaps.
Apparently.
That would be a pretty miserable.
The rumors of the neocons are to be believed.
Yeah, and you started the program with the positioning of aircraft carriers
down
that area. This is not good.
It's scary stuff. Kenneth Benedict, the executive director of The Bulletin, the website, thebulletin.org. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And for the important work that you're doing for alerting us all.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio. We'll be right back.
So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But while you swelter down there in your shelter, you can see me. on your TV. While we're attacking frontally, watch Brinkley and Huntley describing contrapuntally the cities we have lost. No need for you to miss a minute of the agonizing Holocaust.
Yes, the perfect bumper music was Tom Lehrer from 15 years ago to follow the Doomsday Clock, folks. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. By the way, Joe Biden, just to correct one of our callers, David pulled the roll call vote for me here on the confirmation of Alberto Gonzalez, the 109th Congress. This was done on February 3rd, 2005 at 4:29 p.m. The Joe Biden voted nay. He voted no on the confirmation of Gonzalez to be Attorney General of the United States. So we had a caller earlier who said that Biden had voted for Gonzalez. Important to keep the record straight. Larry Scott is with us. VAWatchdog.org, the website. Larry, the chief cook and bottle washer there. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Thank you again, and congratulations on moving into the Franken slot on Air Africa.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, thank you.
It'll keep you busy.
It will. Indeed, it will. Senator Harry Reid today introduced the Retired Pay Restoration Act of 2007. Did you get this news release? It just arrived in my email box here.
Yes, this has been around for years. This is one of those bills. It's called concurrent receipt, is the way veterans refer to it. And this bill has bounced around Congress in one form or another since, golly, I think 1997. I think it's been 11 years now that they've been trying to get this thing passed. Of course, with a Republican majority, it hasn't. Basically, what concurrent receipt is, if you have retired from the military and you did your 20 or more years and you get retirement pay, and then the VA rates you with a disability, okay, let's say you're 50% disabled because of a knee injury, those figures are offset.
Offset?
Offset. Can you imagine that?
What does that mean?
What that means is you do not get that disability pay because the retirement is higher. If your disability was paid, in other words, you get one.
It's either or, rather than
you get the highest one.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Right,
it has made no sense for years and years. Over the last couple of years, they have started a phase in of paying concurrent receipt to people whose disabilities are 50% or higher, and they're phasing these in over 10 years. What this bill really does is it goes back and addresses all of the other veterans who have disabilities of less than 50% who were not covered by the earlier legislation. The numbers get a little complicated, but basically what it is, it's a very fair law. It's one that I hope is passed. The Democrats are going to have to do some real searching to come up with the money to pay for it, though. It is only fair. You did your 20 years, you get your retirement. Then they find out you were disabled on top of that. Why should you lose that money just because you're drawing retirement pay? The two things are totally separate issues.
Right.
Yeah,
good. Well, it's good to know that Harry Reid's addressing this. At the same time, over at VAWatchdog.org, I see the VA budget could get as much as $3.6 billion. Democrats skimp on the spending bill, but the VA budget appears safe.
Yeah, that's what it looks like right now. Fact is, we
this
could
is
have
a change from the Republican Congress, isn't it?
Well, no, this is actually about the same thing. A lot of veteran service organizations were hoping for more. Basically, what we're looking at here is pretty much of a continuing resolution for many agencies, including the VA, but they've singled out the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, and they want to pump in an additional $3.6 billion, almost all of that going for health care issues. What this really does, although this is very good news, what this really does is pretty much leave the VA on a status quo for the year. It is not as much as we'd liked. It is not as much as the veterans need, but is a heck of a lot more than obviously the Republicans gave us, because they left a continuing resolution and said, hey, you guys clean it up.
Right. I mean, it didn't even get passed.
No.
Is there anybody in the House or Senate who is seriously working to get the VA budget, particularly the health portion of it, but basically, I mean, that is the VA by and large,
right,
to get the VA budget included under non-discretionary funds rather than discretionary funds?
Yes, but that's only going to happen later this year. First of all, the Democrats have to clean up this budget mess and get the budget bills passed, which they could have a vote today. We'll have to watch on that and see what goes on. And then it would go to the president's desk. We think the president will sign it. From that point on, they're going to start working already on 2008 budgets, and part of those discussions will be taking this whole concept of VA health care out of the discretionary or the argumentative budget every year and just making it mandatory and trying to reverse the trend. And we've talked about this before, Tom, where instead of a top-down budget where the VA says, okay, here's the money, you guys figure out how to use it, we will work from the bottom up where the hospitals and clinics will say, this is our need, and hopefully the government will provide those funds on a mandatory basis.
Right, okay. And very quickly, we just have a few seconds left. The Vets Court rules VA does not have to process Blue Water Navy claims. These are the guys who are exposed to Agent Orange on ships off the coast of Vietnam and are now trying to say, hey, we have Agent Orange problems, and the VA has been saying, sorry, you weren't on the ground?
Right, and what the VA doesn't want to pay these claims. What this basically is just a stay. This allows the VA to stall a little longer while they argue it out. By September or October, we should have a final answer on this from the courts.
Okay, and this is the kind of thing where people can talk to their elected representatives about it, right?
Oh, definitely, Tom.
Okay, good. You can learn all about it over at VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott, thanks for being with us today, Larry.
Thank you again, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 866-440-THOM. Our telephone number. We'll be right back. That's the problem with the economy. George Bush today. Oh man, sometimes it's like you couldn't write this stuff. 34 minutes past the hour, by the way. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Ladies and gentlemen, the state of our economy is strong, said Bush to an audience in Wall Street on Wall Street today. As they note over at thinkprogress.org, in an interview last night, Bush was asked why only 41% of Americans approve of his handling of the economy. Get it? Economy. Quote, Bush says, quote, can that be summed up in one word? Can that be summed up as Iraq? Bush responded, yeah, I think so. We're in a time of war, and war is unsettling. War is negative. What? What? Maybe it's because people don't have the benefits that they used to have after 26 years of a conservative war on the middle class. Maybe it's because they don't have the paychecks that they used to have. Maybe it's because they have to pay a fortune for their health care even when they do have insurance. Maybe it's because their job security, they're concerned that their job, whether it's a factory job or a white-collar job or a pink-collar, whatever it may be, is going to be shipped offshore, or they're going to be replaced by somebody from some other country who just shows up and says, hey, I'll work for half as much. Maybe it's got something to do with that. I mean, what we have right now is the weakest job growth ever. Since the Great Depression. Since Bush became president, it's averaged 0.5% per month. That's the worst of any business cycle since World War II. Not to mention the fact that costs are going through the roof. Housing costs are exploding. Medical costs are exploding. Food costs are going up. Automobiles are... The cost of gasoline, I mean... Yeah. But Bush says, oh, it's just because of the war. People are just unhappy because of the war. Yeah. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Gene in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Gene, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I originally called in to correct that previous caller's comment about Biden voting for Gonzalez, and that's just not true. He did not.
Right.
But she also said that Biden had said that he liked him and that he was the real deal. Could I give you 10 seconds worth of transcript to put that into context?
Sure.
This is Biden. But I want to explain to the public and anybody listening, this is not about your integrity. This is not a witch hunt. This is about your judgment. That's all we're trying to do. So when I get to ask my questions, I hope you'll be candid about it because, not that it's relevant, I like you. You're the real deal, end of quote. So I wanted to correct
that.
So
he's saying, as a human being, I think you're a decent guy, but let's talk about what's going on here.
Exactly, and it was about the judgment, and that's why I voted against Gonzalez. But I had a question for you, too. Prior to the war, there was all the hype about Saddam's Republican Guard and how fierce they were going to be fighting the troops.
Yep.
And then as soon as the war started, they all disappeared. Now, I'm wondering, and I haven't heard anything about this, did that become the Sunni terror squad that it was all planned that, should the ground war ever start, they would just disappear into the countryside and form up the terrorist unit?
Well, I would guess that an awful lot of the Sunnis who are conducting both the ethnic cleansing against the Shiites and the insurgency operations against the U.S. occupiers are probably old elements of the Republican Guard. Certainly, they were the ones who were the first victims of the debathification. I mean, what are you going to do? You take all the people who were part of the military, and because they were parts of the, they were members of the party, you fire them. They go home. They don't have a job, but they still have their gun, and they're the most, you know, well-trained, elite-trained corps. I mean, I'm surprised, frankly, that it took as long as it did for the insurgency to gather steam.
Well, plus these guys, they had nowhere to turn to because once Saddam was overthrown, they had nowhere to run.
Right. They've got a Shiite majority that surrounds them. They've got a country that is openly building alliances with Iran. It wasn't Saudi Arabia that al-Maliki went to say, hey, let's cut a deal. The Sunni Saudi Arabia. It wasn't Qatar. It wasn't Jordan, you know, another country on their border, the Sunni Jordan. It was Iran, the Shiite Iran that he went to cut a deal with. And you got, you know, there's no end to the Iraqi politicians who are, you know, Ahmed Chalabi, you know, and his long ties with Iran and going over there and getting the red carpet treatment. And he's, you know, now a rising star in charge of the Ministry of Finance, as I recall, something like that.
But one final comment, and that was, you know, had they not disbanded the Iraqi regular army, maybe the Iraqi regular army could have corralled some of this Republican Guard, and they wouldn't have been free to do what they're doing today.
Well, I think they should have just said to all of them, hey, you guys, you were in the Army, you're still in the Army.
But that Republican Guard, they were a nasty lot.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It may be that, well, it's impossible to go back and revisit history. I'm guessing if they were a nasty lot that they were very, very competent professional military. And if that's the case, then they may salute whatever flag is in front of them. On the other hand, they may also be the first to fight against what they perceive to be an occupation.
Exactly.
It's a tough one. Gene, thanks for the call. Robert in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Well, Tom, you there?
Yeah, you got to be listening to your phone, not your radio, Robert.
I apologize. I was watching Jerry Falwell on Sunday just so I can laugh at him. You know, because he gets all his money from, you know, his zombies, etc., what you call a Christianist. And all of a sudden he had on his guest preacher was John Hagee. And mm-hmm. I thought he blasted Bush at one point, but he got on to talking about World War III, and then he mentioned a couple quotes, including one of those quotes being from Rush Limbaugh. And then he attacked Bill Clinton for a bombing in a yard for some reason when he was president, and then he says, this comes from a president that fondled Monica Lewinsky, and the whole place went wild.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. You know, I mean, it's just, well, you know, or as Gomer Pyle would say, you know.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
I mean, what'd you expect? You're watching Jerry Falwell. You're gonna hear him go after.
I mean, that's just what it's laughing him because. His show is called Live from Liberty, but I call that show Lies from Liberty because
yeah.
That's all you hear are lies.
Yeah. The true tragedy, Robert, is that there are so many people who are of good faith, decent people, who are watching Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and deriving some value from their Christian faith and finding meaning in some ways in the spiritual experience and in the religious experience, and what they have in front of them are Pharisees. They've got the bad guys in front of them, and it's a shame. Eric in New York City. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hi, it's good to talk to you again. Normally I'm pretty coherent, but I'm really upset. I've been wanting to ask you for a while about these disgraceful attacks on Jimmy Carter by these Christianist fascist and Judeo-Christo fascist. My question is, I forgot my question.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you just want to make the point that the attacks on Jimmy Carter are unfair, I agree with that.
Well, what set me off was a comment by one of your earlier callers that said, that Israel is our ally. Okay, Israel is not our ally. You can agree with me or disagree with me, but that's a fact. We are their ally.
In other words, we're the power that protects them. They're not the power that protects us.
In so many words,
actually, you could flip that around. If Israel is a stabilizing influence in the Middle East, and that can be argued, right? I realize there are people who would say that that's not necessarily the case. But if Israel is acting as a stabilizing influence in the Middle East, and the Middle East is essential to our strategic interests, which it shouldn't be, had we followed Jimmy Carter's course and become independent of Middle Eastern energy, it wouldn't be. But nonetheless, it is right now as a result of Bush and Reagan and Bush and Bill Clinton not going back to Carter's energy policies, then I'd say we're each other's allies.
Well, and as far as the attacks on Carter, I would tell your listeners or anyone within the borders of the United States or anyone under the delusion that there's no apartheid going on in Palestine, watch the movie A Year in Palestine, which I watched a long time ago. I couldn't even really get through the whole thing because it's so upsetting.
Yeah, or go over and see it for yourself.
But
you know,
that's a fact. That's the situation we're in right now.
Yeah, I got it, Eric, and I agree with you. And I think the people should read Jimmy Carter's book before they attack him, frankly. And I say that, again, as I said, as a friend of Israel, as somebody who believes that Israel has an absolute right to exist. I've been to the country many times. I have very, very dear friends who live there, who are Israeli citizens. And I helped start a program, peripherally, but helped start a program in Israel, which is now one of the largest child caring programs in that country. And I wish that in the United States we could have the kind of dialogue about Israel that exists in Israel, that I hear in Israel. Anyhow, Kent in Pittsburgh. Hey, Kent, welcome to the program.
Top of the morning to you, Tom.
Hey, Kent. We've got about a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Okay, it'll take longer than that, but I just want to mention there's a belt in our atmosphere called the Van Allen Belt. It's a magnetic field. It pulls our seasons through the atmosphere.
In the stratosphere, actually.
Yeah, okay. And the overpopulation of the Earth is detrimental to the Van Allen Belt. Each person in the world during their lifetime consumes cubic feet of timberland from cradle to coffin. Since the early 30s on the Gulf Coast of Florida, they've been measuring the water level rise and on some certain beach. And they're building a canal from Lake Michigan to the Missouri River because Lake Michigan's rising.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many people. How do I know this? This was told to me by a practicing paid informer for the city of Pittsburgh drug detective squad.
Kent, I don't think you need an informer from the drug detective squad to tell you that there's too many people. I mean, there were 1 billion people in 1800. Then it only took, that's all of human history, 1 billion people, 1800. The next billion took only 130 years, 1930. The third billion took only 30 years, 1960. The fourth billion took only 14 years, 1978, 1987. And on it goes. You know, here we are, 45 minutes past the hour.
You could spread your wings and fly. And you could try to go so high in the sky that you never come down. You can follow every dream, but when it seems everything you believe never works out. Remember, I'm right here for you.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, also known as Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartman with you. Tim in Smithers, British Columbia, Canada, on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I know you talk an awful lot about health care and about how expensive it is down in the United States. One of the things that I'd like to talk about is kind of dispel the rumor that health care in Canada is free. It's not necessarily free.
You pay like $40 a month, don't you?
I think depending on your income, right? I've got a middle class job. I think I pay around $150 a month for my family of four.
Works out to about $40 a person.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I guess, right. But the lower income that you are, the more the government kicks in to help you with those costs.
Right.
One of the things that I hear an awful lot from some of the people on the right side of your political system is, and even ours to some respect, is that, that in Canada, because we have a socialized medicine, that, you know, we have lower quality of doctors. And I'd like to really dispel that rumor as well, because we had a huge, what we called the brain drain down to the United States, especially in the late 80s and early 90s when your economy was just booming. We had a lot of Canadian doctors go to the United States because they could make three and four times their Canadian salary, you know, through a private American medical offices.
Right.
And
So you see that, you know, I mean, that's, you know, clearly a problem for Canada. How is Canada addressing that?
Oh, well, we're getting, like, my doctor now here in Smithers is a South African doctor, immigrated from South Africa.
Well, and a good friend of mine, Louis Malmadrona, is a physician here. What was he, a physician here in the United States? He's an American citizen. He's practicing medicine up in Calgary.
Right.
So you've got American doctors going to Canada, and he chose to go to Canada to practice medicine because he was just totally fed up with the American healthcare system. He was over it. The insurance companies telling him what he could do and what he couldn't do and all that kind of stuff. He said, that's it. I'm walking away from it.
Right. You know, the other thing too, Tom, is they talk an awful lot about, the choice or lack thereof in Canada or, you know, say some other socialized medicine countries where, you know, they keep saying, oh, well, you don't get the choice. You know what? I don't know that much about medicine. And if the local medical society says, Tim, here's your doctor, you get doctor such and such. You know what? That's okay by me. You know, I don't know that much about medicine. You know, with the internet and television and stuff like that, a lot of people are getting more and more information and becoming more knowledgeable about this kind of stuff. But when it comes right down to the, you know, I've got a bad cough or I've twisted my leg or whatever, and if I go to my doctor, it's okay. I don't necessarily even have to like him, but he knows more about medicine than me.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Tim, thanks a lot for the report from
you
Canada.
You bet, Tom.
I appreciate it. I lived for 10 years. Within an hour and a half of the Canadian border up in Vermont, in central Vermont, and never once saw a Canadian showing up in Vermont looking for health care. Never once, we were hearing all these dire warnings about, you know, don't go to Canada to buy drugs, they're dangerous. Never once ran across, you know, an epidemic of dying Canadians. However, Bernie Sanders was organizing busloads of people. In downtown, you know, downtown every Sunday, Bernie would be there organizing a busload of Americans to go to Canada to get health care, to buy their pharmaceuticals. Anyhow, Mike in Port Orchard, Washington. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
I'd like to make two points, Tom. I think the number one point I want to address is that it takes a continuing resolution of both houses of Congress to support a state of war.
For more than 2 years, yes. According to the Constitution.
The point I'm trying to make is that either House of Congress can pass a resolution saying we don't want no more stinking war,
right?
And that's the end of the state of war.
Yes, according to 4 out of 5 experts who testified before the Senate yesterday. Yes.
Well, so this thing about the can't do anything about the war because you're blocked in the Senate is bull.
Yeah.
All it's needed is the House of Representatives to say, well, there's no more stinking war, and Pinocchio is out of business.
There you go. And a fine thing it would be. A fine thing it would be, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call and for that. All the more reason why we need to be calling our elected representatives and saying, hey, get with the program here. We don't need no stinking war. Ajax in Wisconsin. Hey, Ajax.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to thank Nova M Radio once again and to let you know that my cats eat Purina One cat chow. And
oh, cool.
Called Purina and let them know about it, where I learned about their cat food.
Thank you.
And these drums of war with Iran, this to me, I think, is like, you know, major bad news.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Think about what happened with the Bush administration over the past 4 years with the war in Iraq, how it basically gave them free rein to do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And what is going to happen with a war in Iran? I mean, think about it. I mean, he'll have total control once again,
yeah.
Where, you know, no voice of discontent or criticism will be allowed to be, you know, mentioned.
A rat is most dangerous when it's backed into a corner. And right now, Bush is backed into a corner. Bush and Cheney, actually. It looks like Cheney's the architect of all this stuff. And I think that we need to be very concerned about that. Ajax, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're going to wrap up the show. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be mixing it up with conservative Peter Pitts, debating Bush's health care plan. Is health care a right or a privilege? That and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Take good care.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.